The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Care what anybody says. I like our new theme song.
What should we do about
what about you, Ruth?
It's very upbeat at this time of the morning. I like it.
I like it.
Are you getting negative feedback on it?
Well, didn't we get negative feedback in the chat room last week?
I was not privy to everything that went on in the chat room last week. I couldn't tell you.
It might have been those private messages we were getting. Hey, you are joining We the People Radio. It is Sunday morning. It's a beautiful day, a little overcast and a little cool, but feels like the holidays. And I think that, well, we're going on 2 weeks since the election, and I think that we've all recovered a little bit. You're joining Elizabeth Woodward and our guest, Ruth Angel, this morning. Erin Ryan is in Virginia, and she'll be back tonight. And our engineer, Bob Martin. Hey, guys.
Good morning, ladies.
Good morning. It's hard. Big shoes to fill for Erin.
Well, I figure I feel her shoes just by sitting in the chair.
There
is that
go.
Good enough?
I like that. Big seat to fill.
So is
Erin doing stuff for Doug in Virginia?
Well, no, she's attending a Tea Party symposium convention in Virginia.
Really?
And there are representatives from about between 50 and 60 Tea Party groups across the country.
Really?
So
I thought the Tea Party was going away.
It's kind of funny. You hear about how the Tea Party is dead, but boy, did we do good locally. And just a big shout out to all of the Tea Party candidates that got on the ballots and in office. A lot of applause and kudos to those folks. And honestly, and the thing is if you listen to any of the national talk show hosts, they talk like California has already fallen off the cliff.
Yeah, it's pretty depressing to listen to everybody else talk about us as the canary in the minefield, you know.
Yeah.
But I have to say, I'm so excited that no matter what your position was going into the election on the national level, locally, we said a lot. We actually made statements here in Shasta County, I think.
Well, think about it. The headline in our local newspaper yesterday, top of the page, giant headline, said Tea Party activist gets on city council. I mean, I don't care. I like the way it looks.
Paper having a hard time wrapping its mind around that?
I don't know. I think that at the end of the day, they may not admit it, but they know that we are a thoughtful group of people. We're productive.
Participating.
They know that we come from all walks of life, so they know we're nonpartisan. And they can't deny it. They try to, but they can't. They wouldn't be trying so hard to deny it.
Now, evidently, barring some kind of recount, Gary Cadd won by 11
votes. Absolutely, absolutely.
11 votes.
Now, if there is a recount, we'll all come out and help watch that recount. So,
how about bringing those folks from Afghanistan or Afghanistan, Germany, those UN monitors.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny, we're going to talk about all the things that happened on Election Day today. We've got Ruth Weiss and Linda Payne from the Election Integrity Project, and we'll be giving them a call in a few minutes. And I actually worked with the Election Integrity Project in Shasta County this year. And I'm going to let them give the history of how they came about. But again, it's all that grassroots movement. It's all of the people that wake up and say, you know what? This is a great country. We don't like the direction that it's heading. We may choose to disagree on a few issues between ourselves, but at the end of the day, we want our freedom. And so this project is a great way to get involved during any election season. But Ruth and Linda Payne are going to talk a little bit about what kind of things they saw and what types of voter fraud were documented in the state of California during the election.
Let me ask you, Elizabeth, before we talk with them, what did it take? What kind of commitment did did it take for you when you sent out the notices this was happening and get involved? What did it take and what kind of commitment so that people know coming into the next election season that this is something they may want to do?
Well, for me, it took a bigger commitment because it started off with Ruth Weiss out of San Diego County coming onto our show. And after having her on for 2 hours, I thought, you know, that's something I really want to do. And the reason that I was excited about it was because I felt that it was something anyone could plug into. And so from my standpoint, it took a little more commitment because it was a huge learning curve. And Ruth and Linda will talk more about what is involved under the corporate umbrella of the Election Integrity Project, because we literally did volunteer for a corporation, and we do have to play by those rules. And so from my standpoint, there was a lot of a learning curve.
But so it just meant folks, going for training.
I went for training.
For 2 days, 3 days?
I drove to Fresno for some training, and then came back, and for the individuals that were poll observers on election day, went through training. I, having gone through Train the Trainer, then trained them, and it was, the first workshop was 4 hours, and then the additional training was another 4 hours.
So, 8 hours.
Yeah.
Basically, and then you're ready to go on.
But they had homework. Yeah, they had homework. They had to learn the California election codes. They had to know what to look for, how to recognize it, and how to handle it. So they did go home with a lot of homework.
Oh, good.
And then I was
so you're just not going there, standing there going, what do I do?
No, there was they had to know legally what they could and could not do. And then I was the central location on election day. It was my phone number that they called in with every time they had an issue. So I got phone calls all throughout the day from my poll observers who were in different locations. Most of them roved to different locations. We covered 23 polling places just within the city of Reading.
You know, I live in Old Chasta, so for me, it was like I looked for the monitors. I looked for...
Yeah. So it was... Oh, Ruth's going to sneeze.
Excuse me.
Bless you. That was cute. See, I'm usually clearing my throat. So...
but anyway, there was nobody up. I mean, it didn't appear... It was pretty quiet, actually, up
I
there.
I think in Old Chasta... Do you have an actual polling location?
We do. The Shasta Elementary.
Okay, because I know there's a cutoff, like 250 people or less don't actually have a place that they can go vote.
I know and Kurt talked about that, that he has to, and they feel like it takes away their sense of patriotism to go vote on voting day, and we actually choose to vote and not fill out the early...
I've always done that. I like going and getting my sticker.
Me too.
There's just something about that process that makes it really patriotic.
Patriotic, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, we do so many things online. We do so many things by picking up the phone and ordering with a credit card. You know, so much of what we do does not involve interaction with other human beings. And there is something about going to a polling location and casting your vote and knowing that all of the people there that are running it are volunteers.
And feeling and proud.
And they're stepping up, too.
Yeah.
So
actually, yeah.
I would never trade that experience for anything. Little convenience, I don't care.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe they should allow some of these people. They make them conditional. And maybe those 11 votes, you know, those were a lot of those people out there. But my thought is that they should allow these folks to go vote at some place and have their names, you know, sitting on the side. And, you know, if you didn't mail it in, feel free to come.
Yeah. I
think it's wrong.
And they can do that. They can show up with their absentee ballot and choose to turn that in and fill out a new ballot in the polling location. So they've got options. But it's going to be interesting to talk with Ruth and Linda and find out what occurred. You know, we're a little bit sheltered up here. I think that there's probably some, you know, a little hanky-panky going on from time to time. But the fraud is in some of the metropolitan areas. The heavily populated areas is rampant, and I think we're going to be shocked at what we find out.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny because after the election, I said, I went to bed and Proposition 30 was losing, and I woke up and it won, and I thought to myself, okay, now how did that happen?
Yeah, I think we all went to bed the night before the election feeling pretty good, and then by 24 hours later, we were How a little shocked at what the outcome was. So,
and you don't want to think that it's possible.
Yeah.
And you know better than I do, but you don't want to think it's possible. And yet, it is in the back of your mind.
Well, you know, and the thing is, at the end of the day, you're dealing with human nature. There's two things that you can count on. Well, death and taxes, of course. But human nature and follow the money.
Follow the money.
No matter what it is, you're dealing with human nature and you're dealing with money because that's the big prize at the end of the rainbow. And you can't deny those two things. So, we have to pull ourselves out of our naivete sometimes and realize that the unthinkable
world
is doable.
Yeah, that we're coming into a technology world, and I think that there was an article about George Soros owning the company that actually does the voting thing. So I don't know that comes into play, because we actually have to write, I don't know about your polling place, but we actually have to, draw the line, which I'm in favor of.
Right.
And I don't think that doing electronic polling is appropriate.
I don't either. It's too easy to have some kind of a technological glitch, and you don't know what's written into the software.
That's right.
Hey, so Bob, how are we doing?
So far we have Linda. We're trying to get Ruth on the other line. We're not sure if I have to conference them or if it's something on their end. But
okay, you want to take a break?
They are both ready to go momentarily as soon as we get that phone glitch figured out. So
okay,
yes.
Great. So we'll take our first break and refreshing your cup of coffee. And
it's all the Christmas decorations in here that did it, Bob.
Yeah, Bob came in and the place was decked out with all kinds of lights and kind of threw him for a loop.
Yeah, it happened sometime between Friday night and Sunday morning.
It was the little elves. You know they come out in the middle of the night, Bob, when nobody's here.
they paid us a visit, yes. Anyway, you're listening to We the People on AM 1460, KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media. Stay tuned.
Things before my eyes just teach me to despise. Well, make man more wise. Live within my own refrain. My eyes just hurt my brain. But you have seen their sin. Well, the games people play now, every night and every day now, never meaning what they say now, never saying what they mean. While they while away the hours in their ivory towers, till they're covered up with flowers in the back of a black limousine.
Whoa. Welcome back. Hey, Bob, what's the deal with your microphone?
I was going to say, did you headbutt it or something?
No, it looks like it's just
Bob, I still have an hour and a half. Give me time here.
It's like hanging by a thread.
It looks like a Christmas ornament swaying on a Christmas tree.
Yeah.
Don't breathe too hard.
I don't want to know what happened in here yesterday.
Yeah, well, maybe they started their Christmas party early. They started it in the control room.
Well, they did. I wasn't invited.
Hey, welcome back to We the People Radio. We're talking with Bob and Ruth, and we're going to kind of jetty forward to our guest today. I'm going to start with Linda Payne. Is Linda on the line?
She is. Ruth is in for Aaron this morning, by the way. Aaron is on assignment.
Sort of.
On assignment.
she's back there hobnobbing in Virginia with a lot of Tea Party folks and learning great stuff.
But not Petraeus, unfortunately.
I don't think so. No. Anyway, we are going to talk about what happened during the election season, specifically on Election Day. It wasn't exactly the turnout that we were hoping for, and the results were not what everyone wanted. But we're going to specifically probably talk about California. We're going to talk with Linda Payne and Ruth Weiss of the Election Integrity Project. This is their third time on the show, and we brought the Election Integrity Project into Shasta County, so we'll be somewhat familiar with what they're talking about. But are you in there, Linda?
I am.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Good. Hey, for all of those folks out there that are tuning in for the first time, why don't you give us a brief update on how the Election Integrity Project came about, and I really like the focus on the grassroots element.
Okay. We started this effort back in 2010 when people all over the state went out to observe the polls. And just as citizens, we wanted to find out what's going on and what does it all look like and how do elections work. Many of us had never worked for a candidate or been involved in politics at all. And when we went to observe the polls, a lot of what we all saw was alarming, because it seemed that there were policies and procedures in place that seemed to open the door to the potential for voter fraud. And then, of course, we saw incidents taking place that were inappropriate. We got calls from voters who said they went in to vote and someone had signed the book for them. So it was a challenge.
Hey, Linda. I think, oh,
okay, we got you offline here.
We're just getting a little bit of feedback there. Not a problem. Go ahead.
Okay, we're good. Okay, so after going to the polls and having so many reports of concern, we got in touch with True the Vote, an organization out in Texas, and found out that they had been doing this for a couple of years. And so several of us went to Texas and went to one of their training to see what it was they were doing. We came back to California and decided we would see how we could implement it here. And we implemented it just a little differently than True the Vote because we're California. And so that's what we that's how we got started.
Now, True the Vote could not come into California because we don't. Is it because we don't have a statewide database of registered voters?
Well,
or was it privacy laws?
You know what? They can be in California. There are some
okay.
Tea Party groups that are connected with True the Vote. True the Vote has a national database. And so for every state, they have to purchase the national database mm-hmm. or they get it from various sources. But California, you're correct, does not have a statewide database. We are the only state in the nation that does not follow or comply with the federal Help America Vote Act, which requires every state to have a statewide database and to update it every year. So what we had to do in California, since we could not rely on a statewide database, we have had to purchase the data county by county and run the queries to see that we don't have duplicates and high numbers of multiple people registered at the same place or registered at businesses or deceased people on the voter rolls. We've had to go county by county, whereas the rest of the states can tap into through the Vote's national database and do their work that way.
Okay. Now, I'm going to let you guys kind of lead the conversation, because when we talked earlier in the week, I do know that with the Election Integrity Project in the state of California, you do have attorneys that you consult on a regular basis before you put any information out there. So I would like to let you guys kind of lead the conversation, share what you know and what you can share with the listeners. I know that people are really interested in finding out what kind of fraud took place during elections and maybe what can be done about it. And I know Ruth Weiss, is Ruth on the line?
Yes, can you hear me?
Hi.
Hi.
And Ruth, you've got San Diego County, and I know you had 300 volunteers out there manning the polling locations, doing poll observing, and I guess they gave you a real run for your money, the other side, not your volunteers.
Election Day gave us a real run for our money, absolutely. It was very, very difficult. But our volunteers were just spectacular, and they hung in there, and they were just marvelous, and they've given us a great deal of feedback now that we can, you know, process and learn more from.
So what can you tell us about Election Day?
Well, I'll give you a picture of what it looked like on Election Day statewide, and then we can have Ruth talk a little bit about what she saw in San Diego, which really reflects it doesn't reflect every county, but it reflects the counties where the problems took place in large numbers. They were similar. So statewide, we had volunteers between 2,000 and 2,300 volunteers go to the polls from San Diego County up through Shasta County. You guys did a great job, by the way. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Solano County over in the Bay Area, all the way to the counties along the Nevada border, and then, of course, counties down through the central part of the state. And really what was exciting is that we sent volunteers to the polls who were trained, as you just spoke about earlier. We did worked very hard to train them in what they were allowed to do and what they weren't allowed to do. And the good news is out of approximately 2,300 volunteers that went to the polls, we didn't get any bad press. We didn't get all of the any kind of complaints from inspectors. In fact, we had inspectors asking our volunteers to contact the EIP headquarters because many, at least down here in the southern counties and our large counties, could not reach their register voter hotline to help deal with things like they were running out of ballots and soon were to have none and could not reach their register voters to let them know they desperately needed ballots. So they ended up contacting us to see if we could somehow get a hold of someone who could get ballots to them. And that was pretty common in some of our big counties. We have about 1,500 incident reports that have come in all over the state, and we believe by the time they all finish coming in, we'll have about 2,000. This has allowed us to see the pattern of what kinds of trouble we have, where the problems are. We saw patterns where simple things like the checking in of voters, that is a election law is very specific about how voters are to check in. It's in our election codes, our big 2.5 to 3 inch thick book. And we saw throughout the state that that really is not being taught.
And if I can interject, I know that that was a huge problem up here in Shasta County as well. And I know that voters are required to publicly state their name and address so that it can be heard, and then the poll inspector or the poll worker must repeat that back loud enough to be heard. And that didn't happen anywhere.
No, didn't happen when I voted.
Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, that's common. We have hundreds and hundreds of reports regarding that one specific incident. So it's anywhere from the checking in process all the way to where we have observers who witness criminal activity. And right now I'm probably not going to state the criminal activity on because in all things dealing with crime, we have to go through the process of taking that evidence to the correct authorities and filing charges and that type of thing. So we're going to do what EIP does, and that is we're going to follow the law. And so we're not going to get out ahead of ourselves, but we will take action for every incident in which we know the law was broken, which it was witnessed. Our trained volunteers filled out incident reports on a form that includes the verbiage, I swear under penalty of perjury, that what I saw is true and factual.
And that is, you know, when Ruth, my co-host, when she and I were chatting ahead of time, she asked what poll observers go through in terms of training, and I gave her some brief highlights, but they also have very specific paperwork that they have to use, and all of the paperwork is designed to stand up in a court of law. So that if anything is observed, if that information needed to be submitted as evidence, that it would hold its own, correct?
Right. Absolutely. You know, and the good news is I know this was a tough election for all parties. Really, those who went to the polls and observed the polls, it was alarming to see the chaos that our system is in. That is the one word that absolutely depicts California elections, is absolute chaos. And every county who has reported in has reported some level of chaos. Some counties much more. But every county had some level of chaos, and even the ROVs who were working so hard to do a good job and get the job done right, there seems to have been an element within California that overwhelmed the system.
I know we have to take a break, but the observers that were at the polling places, I read in the paper about the AFL-CIO dispatching 300 volunteers to observe as well. Was there any conflict, or did you just stand in a corner with the observers that were there for one purpose or the other? What was that like?
We did have various groups of people observing the polls, and they are allowed to watch the polls just as we are. We trained our observers that those other observers are considered voters, and observers are not allowed to speak to voters. So we trained our observers that even if there were other people watching the polls, that they needed to follow the law and not speak to those observers, just do their job, observe, take notes, and communicate properly if they saw something that needed to be communicated about. So we actually did not get a lot of reports of other observers having conflict with our observers. There were some challenges here and there, but unfortunately the real challenges came from poll workers and inspectors who in some of our counties were extremely abusive to our poll observers.
And, you know, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, let's talk a little bit about the momentum that has been behind this massive turnout of volunteers in the state of California, because you've mentioned to me before that what people don't realize is that across the country, California has the largest grassroots volunteer effort in the nation. And I want to touch on that a little bit when we get back. Take a quick break, grab some coffee. We'll be back.
You're listening to We the People on AM 1460 KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
It isn't a dream. There's 16,000 new IRS agents just waiting to follow you around with their little black briefcases.
I think they're following Mark around.
Yeah.
Thanks to Obamacare. Pay for your health insurance, yeah.
I cannot wait, honestly, for January, maybe the end of January, first part of February, to talk to people that are in denial about what's going down and who work for somebody and get a paycheck. I want to find out how small their paycheck ends up being. By the time all the new taxes kick in.
Or when they get their full-time hours cut back to part-time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think what people don't realize, and we talked a little bit about it yesterday, was that a lot of people are in this frame of mind that $250,000, they're not even close to that. But they really are.
Sure they are. I mean, isn't that gross adjusted income?
It's total gross income. Yeah,
not net.
It's not net.
It's before all your deductions, after.
So I think people, once they get, in California, the first test of the new supermajority, Democratic majority, will be the VLF, which is the vehicle license fees that are going to triple.
They
want to bring that back. So it's going to be... It's going to be interesting. Of course, middle class will be not attached.
Yeah,
I like what the guy in Florida who owns the 40 Denny's restaurant.
I like
what he did. He's
just passing it on to the customer.
Rather than raise his menu prices, he's just putting out a flat 5% Obamacare surcharge on every bill.
I wonder if it says Obamacare on the menus. Obamacare surcharge.
And I know we're talking about elections, but I also think that what people don't realize, and I was a Teamster for 20 years, not willingly, but
ew,
I was forced into it. I say that because that it was part of the program, and I needed a job. And the bottom line with the unions is that everybody that is a union member will be a part-time worker. They will be part-time. They will not be full-time anymore, and that is going to destroy this working class.
And so, people are going to be juggling two part-time jobs, assuming they can find them. Not going to be pretty out there.
Teamsters, credit for telling the Bakers Union. Are you guys out of your minds when the Bakers Union refused to end their strike and resulted in the demise of Hostess?
Yeah, 18,500 jobs. All right, so We've brightened up your Sunday. Happy to do it, by the way. So you guys are still in there, Linda and Ruth. We got the phone stuff figured out?
Apparently not.
Okay. Who do we have on, Linda?
Yeah, I'm on.
Okay, all right. We'll just.
And can you hear me too?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Okay. So before we went to.
Okay.
You're both on. Okay.
This is major news. We're now patched into one line.
Right.
Oh, good deal.
Beautiful.
The decorations worked.
Beautiful. A little sparkly doesn't hurt. So we were chatting a little bit before the break about what built the momentum for this grassroots movement, because you've told me in the past that. Across the nation, California has the largest grassroots organized effort in the nation in terms of voter integrity. And you've, you know, because you've got the finger on the pulse, you know, you kind of know all about that.
Well, we do, and we've actually had people from outside of California letting us know that who are involved in the other organizations. And I think across the country, really everyone did a fabulous job getting out there. The difference between California and the other states is that the issue happened in California first in a big way. 2010, when there was a big wave of people getting involved in what appeared to be a fair, honest election in California, there was a screeching halt. And so California citizens immediately knew something was terribly wrong and got involved in a big way. First, because we knew our state was in trouble. What's happening in California really is not a partisan effort. This Election Integrity Project and the issue of fair, honest elections is not partisan. This is a citizen issue, and where the question comes into play is why would 2,300 volunteers step up to get trained and do the kind of training and homework you spoke about and then go spend their day observing the polls? Why would they do that without pay? Because we don't pay them. There's no money.
Right.
We're a grassroots organization, and we all get out there and do the best we can and learn how to do it. And the reason is because we absolutely believe in the constitutional principles that this country was founded on, and we want to hold the line on that. We don't like the direction that the state is going. It does seem to be moving fast-paced toward European socialism. And so many Californians oppose that they are willing to get the training and make sure that if we're going to move to socialism, it's because the people want to move to socialism and not those in Sacramento. And we learned in our 2012 elections, the California citizens really do not have the kind of voice in our government that the Constitution protects and provides for. But what I want to do now is to give you even a bigger picture of what that looks like. I'm going to have Ruth chime in. Ruth has the largest volunteer base of all of our teams in every state. Not every state, I mean in every county. And so Ruth can kind of give you a picture of how it is, excuse me, how it is that she has about 300 volunteers that went out to the polls. And she has a consistent team of teams that work throughout the year getting prepared for that. So,
I'd like, before Ruth starts, I'd like to add that the training that is made available, for instance, to myself to train my poll observers is a video presentation of Ruth giving a class. And she does a fantastic job. I watched it from beginning to end three times, and when I presented the class myself, people just absolutely loved it. So kudos to Ruth for that fabulous video that is used as our training materials.
Well, thank you. That's very sweet. You know, people ask questions all the time. How do you get all these people to come out and volunteer their time and that kind of thing? And what I've noticed is that people have known for quite some time that something is wrong. There's this sense of unease that somehow the system is broken and people's voices are not being heard the way they're supposed to be heard. And EIP gives them a vehicle to do something about it. I think for years people have been sitting there saying, what can I do, what can I do, what can I do? And they had no leadership and no idea what they could do about it, and so there was that sense of frustration that was just palpable. And then EIP came along, and we had a program. We had specific things they could do, whether it was working on voter rolls or helping to educate people or going out on election day and working at the polls and observing. And that gave people this sense of, okay, now we've got a program. Now we can go do something. And they were eager to jump on board and say, yeah, I can do this. And so I think that's one of the reasons, the major reason that we have the volunteer base we have across the state is that people intrinsically know that there's a problem and haven't known what to do other than send emails and grouse about it. And now there's a program that's organized and gives them an opportunity to be a part of the solution. And I think that's what brings people out.
And you don't have to advocate for you don't advocate for any one party, and the people, their volunteers don't have to declare whose party they vote for. You keep it unbiased and neutral. Is that correct?
Absolutely. We make it very clear, beginning, end, and all the way through the middle, that this is a completely nonpartisan effort, that regardless of where you come down politically, any person with any integrity wants it to be fair and honest and wants the results of an election to clearly reflect the voice of the people who had the legal right to cast a ballot in that election and chose to exercise that option. And that's what people are feeling we don't have going on in California. It's interesting, people who are not even involved in our effort but know about us have been calling and emailing after Election Day because they had a heightened awareness and they went just to their own poll to cast their own ballot, and then they would come back and say, well, this is what happened to me. Even though they weren't poll observers, they still wanted to let us know what they were seeing and how they were not treated the way they thought they should have been and that kind of thing.
So, that's great.
Yeah, the concept is growing, and then our people are telling other people, and so I'm getting calls and emails from friends of poll observers who said, well, my friend is so-and-so, and she told me I could call you to tell you this story.
Oh, that's
and so
great.
People are very aware that there is a vehicle out there that is collecting the stories that they have to tell, and an organization now that has an opportunity to take some action with regard to that and maybe help give people of California the voice they deserve.
So how were things in San Diego County? I know there's a lot, and we're going to take a quick break here in about 45 seconds, but when we come back, give us an idea, as much as you can legally, on, what was it like in the San Diego County area? You know, you're heavily populated. You're on the border. I don't know if that factors in. You know, we're in far northern California, more rural. I think that the dynamics are very different in terms of the level of activity. But I'd like to find out a little bit more specifically, if you can, about what took place in San Diego County.
Sure, that'd be fine.
And we're going to jump into a quick break, but we'll return with Ruth Weiss, a county coordinator for San Diego County, and Linda Payne, the founder of the Election Integrity Project of California.
This is We the People.
She just started liking cheating songs and was bothering me. I don't know if it's a cheating she likes or just the melody.
We're back. We're going to hit the top of the hour here pretty quickly, where we'll take a 5-minute break, but we've got about 7 or 8 minutes to kind of touch on what does Election Day look like in a heavily populated area. And, you know, when you are in far northern California like we are, you know, we do know that the largest voice does come from the larger populated areas. So what kind of things took place in San Diego County?
Well,
that you can talk about.
The word that Linda used a few minutes ago, I think, is very reflective of what we saw, and that word was chaos. And I know that that's not very descriptive, but it really is kind of what we saw. The thing that affects me, you know, as I think about it, is this concept that has grown up among poll workers, not all of them, but some of them, and a lot of the registrars of voters, is that they don't really see the elections as a strict legally controlled way of getting accurate feeling of the people out there. And so they kind of look at the laws as something to either take or leave depending on whether they like them or whether they can think of a more convenient or easier way to do something. And so we a lot of times have bending and breaking of certain election codes just for convenience sake. And that starts to create the chaos so that even when you're not talking about, I'm uncomfortable with the word fraud because we look for and document a great deal more than that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose fraud is out there and when we see it, we'll tackle it. But it's this lack of respect for the legal process, the lack of respect for following exactly the procedures that are laid out in the election code that causes a lot of inaccuracy in the results of the election as a result of that. So you have people voting where they're not supposed to be voting. You have people even, voting from different counties, from even different states because, you know, the attitude out there is, oh, well, they're people, let them vote. And
we did hear that.
That kind of thing that I think creates the chaos because now suddenly, instead of seeing the elections as a wonderful privilege where you go in there and you have this sense of pride that I belong to this county and I'm duly registered and I went through the right steps and now I have a right to, you know, express my voice, it's seen as, you know, as everybody gets to buy a ticket to the rock concert and everybody gets to walk into the garden club and instead of following a procedure of Robert's Rules of Order so that everyone in turn is heard, it becomes this, you know, this chaos of everybody shouts all at the same time. It's kind of what it looks like at the polls when you have sort of what I think has grown up to be a lack of respect and a lot of times just a lack of awareness that there is a specific election code that's set out as exactly step by step how election day should look and how people should cast their votes. And that is really being very much just ignored in a lot of places.
You know, I went through the county training prior to election day, so I would kind of have an idea of how our county handles it. And the actual description of election day was a two-hour training, whereas my training for my poll observers was a four-hour training. And in going through the county training for the 2 hours, there were a lot of details that were discussed, but there was never that underlying message that this is a formal legal process and you must do these things and follow the letter of the law.
Well, who holds them accountable? Who holds the poll workers accountable for that 2 hour training?
You put your finger exactly on that, and we discovered that even the training is in opposition to what the law states, and the actual paperwork and the manuals that are given to the poll workers in their training are actually at times contrary to what California law says has to happen because someone's decided, oh, this is a better way, let's just do it this way. Or sometimes you get the excuse, well, you know, the law hasn't kept up with technology, so we just don't listen to that law or we don't follow that law. And that's what's disturbing. If a law needs updating, fine, let's update it. But as long as it is the law, it needs to be followed. And that's, you know, that's a concept that not everyone is comfortable with. You know, some people say, oh, no, don't be ridiculous. It's the law, but it's silly, so let's not follow it. And, you know, and that's what leads to elections that, you know, with results that we can't necessarily be comfortable with. Because, you know, the law is the law.
When the
county trains their workers, it's a two-hour training, and then they also have an online element to it, but that online element is not a requirement. It's only an option that they can go on and get more training if they want to. And it's all procedure. And in my county, the trainings that I've attended, it's very well done, and the instructors are very professional and very good at what they do. But there is not a single underlining anything about the law.
No, there's not.
The procedure. So as a worker with, you know, an intelligent mind, I could go out there and this is what happens. And they say, well, you know, we have to get from A to Z, but I can think of a better way to do it. And because they don't understand that these procedures are precisely the way they are because there's a law that backs them all up and that there's a reason behind that law, they just figure, oh, well, you know, it's easier for me to do it this way, so I'll just do it this way instead of that way. We'll all get to the same end anyway. And so they don't get that legal understanding. underpinning. And as you said, our training, and that's why we encourage people who are going to work the polls as well as those who are going to observe to actually come to our training as well. And they get the legal understanding of why the procedures are what they are and how that protects everyone's voice and everyone's vote. And that's the difference.
And yeah. We're going to have a hard break here, but I have a question for you. Is it, your organization is actually going to force the state, the counties, to put in better practices for Election Day, if that's what I'm... And so the legal issues that you really can't talk about that occurred on Election Day, your organization is actually going to tighten the ship, so to speak.
Well, that's exactly our goal, and that's our game plan. We believe that there are various ways that we can do that, and the first step to that is gathering all the information. That's the phase we're in now, so that we can take that well-documented information and present it to the authorities that need to see it.
Okay, and Linda, we're going to take a hard break. Let's touch on that when we come back. And I want to educate people a little bit on the pros and cons to absentee voting, the pros and cons to a provisional ballot,
early voting,
and all of the things that people are not quite aware of. So we are talking to Linda Payne and Ruth Weiss of the Election Integrity Project. Going to take a hard break here. Listen to the news, top of the hour. Grab your coffee. Come back in 5 minutes.
More of We the People straight ahead on KCNR Shasta Redding.
I think them. I think they're zombies. Have you noticed there's more zombie movies coming out?
Or vampire.
And zombie TV series? What's the whole deal with the big zombie theme?
Don't know.
Have you noticed?
It's the whole 2012 thing, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
It must be the millennial generation into the vampires and the zombies and
apocalyptical thing.
That's right. Yes. We have until December 21st.
Zombies. Gosh. Bureaucrats, in other words. That's kind of what I thought, maybe. Don't you?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay.
What do our guests think?
I don't know. Hey, so I did my head bump on the way out, Bob.
Yes, I caught that.
Yeah, just for you. Cause,
square cause, between the headphones.
Because it is not a Sunday on We the People Radio if I don't bump the microphone with my head at some point.
The head bobbing.
So we can get that out of the way, and we're done, and I've done it. So we are with... Ruth Weiss and Linda Payne of the Election Integrity Project.
And if you're just joining us, Ruth Angel is in for Erin Ryan this morning.
Erin's on the East Coast doing what she does. She's meeting with a lot of Tea Party folks from around the nation and looking forward to having her back and sharing what she learned. And I suspect that because of the huge success that the Tea Parties have had locally in Northern California, that she probably has a few things to teach them.
Oh, I'm sure they think she's a rock star.
Yeah. So
during our break, we had talked about provisional, early voting, that sort of thing. So my question for the guests is, it was pretty discouraging on Election Day when by 8 o'clock in the evening, we had a new president. And here we are on the West Coast.
Well, we had the old one recycled.
The old one recycled,
we were hoping for a new guy.
But we went to bed with certain propositions losing, and then when you woke up, how did that happen? And was that provisional ballots? Was that early ballots? I wanted to get their opinion on what do they think about that, and would they be in favor of early voting? And obviously, would be a lot more work for their group, but I wanted to get their opinion on that.
Because there's a lot of misnomers about absentee ballots. A lot of people don't understand that provisional ballots are counted last. The dangers of early voting. So maybe you could chat about those things and kind of clear up the misconceptions for the folks that are listening.
Okay. We actually believe that there are tremendous dangers, and the open door for fraud exists in greater numbers in early voting and absentee, which is now called vote-by-mail ballots. Every time a voter allows other hands to process their ballot, the possibility for tampering exists. We know that there's a process where if there's a if a ballot has something spilled on it, or if it's crunched a little bit, that the process is that two workers then take that ballot and they create a new ballot for the voter. I bet most voters don't know this.
Didn't know
but
that.
The way they do that is one person reads what the voter put on their ballot, while another person marks the new ballot. So that's a process that you don't know who's marking that ballot. And if the person marking your new ballot is someone who does have a political agenda, even though the one worker reads off, okay, one vote for X candidate, the other worker can choose to mark Y candidate, and who would know the difference?
Hey, now, so Linda, we've got a question from the chat room that asks, why did this early voting ever get started?
You know, I think that it got started to try to help the ROV, registers of voters. People, we have become an impatient society. We want to know now who won. And it's very difficult for us to wait until the ballots are called, because they have till 29 days to count the ballots and verify and check and double check before they call a race. But because we become impatient, somehow that has become the driving force to answer the question, who won? And so here it is, 8 o'clock in California, the polls are closing, and we're already hearing that the race has been called. And we're saying, how in the world can 55 electoral college votes be given to a candidate when we just closed the polls? There's something innately unjust with that. And unfair.
Totally agree.
Because how is our vote even considered if it was already called? So we absolutely believe that the vote that counts is the one the voter puts in the ballot box. That's the most surefire way to know that that at least your vote was counted, because there's fewer people handling it. And then the next danger is these provisional ballots. We saw a record number of provisional ballots all over.
Yeah, and if I could jump in for just a second, in my own personal example, I went to the polling location where I have voted for 9 years. Nothing has changed. The person that is the poll inspector is a very good acquaintance. Nothing has changed. When I walked in to vote, I was nowhere to be found on those rolls. He was shocked. I was shocked. All of my poll observers calling me throughout the day said that there were so many people that went to vote and they were not on the voter rolls, that these polling locations were running out of provisional ballots and had to have the runners from the ROV's office deliver more.
You know, we are wondering about that, Elizabeth. That was all over the state. We do believe that there is a connection with the thousands and thousands of duplicate registrations on our voter rolls across the state, because they're not updating them. They're not complying with HAVA. We believe there's a direct connection.
And real quickly, can you tell the listeners what HAVA is?
HAVA is the Help America Vote Act. It's a federal law that was passed approximately 10 years ago, and it requires that every state must have a statewide database, mm-hmm. and that database must be updated every year. California is the only state in the union that doesn't have one. We get a waiver from the Department of Justice every year for some reason, and it's causing a huge problem. The question that will slide right into provisionals is, how is it that so many voters this year had one of three things happen? Either their registration was changed to vote-by-mail ballot, and they did not do it.
Exactly.
Someone else did it. They received notice in the mail that they were now a vote-by-mail ballot voter, but many of them did not actually receive a vote-by-mail ballot. And so they had to go to the polls with no vote-by-mail ballot to turn in, and they were forced to vote provisionally.
And then you had those who had been on there, voted the same polls year after year, and this time found that they were moved into a vote-by-mail ballot because the lines had been changed, the precinct lines, and so they were now designated into a small 250 or under group that forced them into vote-by-mail ballots. And so they had to mail in their ballots, and they wanted desperately to vote in person. And the only way to do that was to drive to the registered voter's office. And then the third was what you talked about, people who went to the polls and they were no longer on the list. And that's a big question we want to have answered across the state. What happened that in so many counties, people are no longer on the rolls, and even the inspectors are stunned by it. Mm-hmm. And so what I want to do from here is I want to talk about what happens when these huge, huge numbers of provisional ballots are now having to be processed. And they were in record number. I have to tell you, they were in such huge numbers that people were coming to the polls in some of our large counties here in the southern counties, L.A. County especially, and simply they were being given a provisional ballot and just told, find a place to write. Forget the voting booth. They were out of voting booths.
Mm-hmm. That happened here, too.
Sit on a sofa.
Yeah, we had a poll inspector having voters who had to vote provisionally sitting next to her while they were filling out their ballot. She was taking the ballots from them, putting them into their provisional envelopes, and sealing the envelopes for them.
Yep, and I think that was across the state as well.
Yeah.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to have Ruth talk about provisional ballots. She's really sharp on the ins and outs of that, and really people need to understand that is absolutely the worst way to vote.
Okay, and before we do that, because I don't want her to get interrupted, we're going to take a quick break. Okay. Thank our advertisers. You are listening to KCNR 1460 Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media. Choice, Bob. Who's that?
That's Alan Jackson.
Nice.
You may have heard of him.
I have. Hey, so, oh, yeah.
He was in the news this week.
Yeah, and somewhat recently. Anyway, welcome back to Bob and Ruth Angel, and we're talking with Ruth Weiss of San Diego County and Linda Payne, the founder of the Election Integrity Project. We are chatting and streaming live at wethepeopleradio.us. If you're listening and you've got a question for our guests, the call-in number is 530-605-4567. I encourage you to go to wethepeopleradio.us. Everything about today's guests is on that webpage. You can follow along while you listen, and there are links to every show that we've ever done that you can individually email out and spread the good cheer and the good news and the truth. Anyway, so we're going to swing back to provisional ballots. Why don't you ladies take it away?
All right. As Linda was saying before, we had enormous numbers of provisional ballots, probably record numbers, and many of them were because of the errors and people who legitimately were showing up at the right place to vote and found that things had changed. But we also have a society, again, as Linda was saying earlier, where everybody wants to do things the easy way, the convenient way. And so we have a lot of people voting provisionally by choice because it's easier to vote where they drop their kids off for school, or it's easier to vote on the lunch hour by where they work, or it's easier to vote with their friend before they take their morning walk. And so we have people actually deciding to do things the easy way because it doesn't matter. You can just walk in and get a provisional ballot. And I know in my county, the prevailing idea from the Registrar of Voters, and she says this at every presentation that she makes, that it's important that every voter leave the polls with a positive experience and feeling good. And so if you tell a voter, gee, I'm sorry, you're in the wrong place, you need to go two blocks that way to, you know, cast your ballot where you're registered, somebody might not be happy. And so they hand those things out like candy rather than helping to direct the voter to where he can vote without the extra manipulation of the provisional ballot. And I think people don't understand that we had a lot of people being told, oh, yes, your vote will be counted tonight, because people were concerned about that. I want to vote in such a way that my vote will be counted tonight. And they were being told by precinct inspectors, oh, yes, these will count tonight. Well, the reality is that we still have a large majority of the provisional ballots that still have not been counted. It's a process. You have to count all the same-day regular ballots first, and then you have to count all of the absentee ballots, and that has to be processed through 7 or 8 different stations of checking, and then they have to compare signatures. And it's a long process and a great deal of manipulation before they finally get to the point where they can open that ballot and then send it through the machine and count it. And we have record numbers of people who did not want to subject their vote-by-mail ballot to the mail system, either because they didn't want to vote early and make up their mind without all the evidence in, or they just didn't want it to go through the mail system. So they walked it in at the polls, and that meant that they had enormous numbers of vote-by-mails to process before they can begin to touch provisionals. Then when they touch the provisionals, there's such a long process that it goes through. First, they have to check and see if that person is a registered voter. Then they have to check to see if that person voted in this election in some other fashion, and then they have to check to see whether the signature matches, and then after that, then they can open it. Then most people who vote provisionally are not only voting out of their precinct, but they could very easily be voting out of their own districts, and so the ballot they fill out is not the same ballot that they were entitled to fill out. The offices are different things. And so they have to, one ballot at a time, pull the ballot to which that voter was entitled and compare it to the ballot that voter actually filled out, and they have to white out the votes that that voter cast that he wasn't entitled to vote. And before they do all of that process, then they can finally cast and count that vote, and that's one at a time. When you have record numbers of provisional ballots being cast, that's going to really slow the system down, and as Linda said, people want to know who won, but we still have some races that are too close to call because they still have so many provisional ballots to process. And so people do not understand how many hands and how many different senses of judgment a provisional ballot goes through that could at any step along the way jeopardize the fact that their ballot could be counted. We also have, though, the problem that the law states that in order to cast a provisional ballot, you have to swear an oath that you are a registered voter in the county in which you're attempting to cast your ballot. And that's gone by the wayside because we had people walk into the polls and announce, oh, I'm registered in X county, or in some cases, I'm registered in another state, but I want to vote here. And the instructions given to the precinct board is go ahead and let them all vote. We'll catch it at the other end.
And that is something that we heard a lot. That's something we heard a lot, was that the poll inspectors, you know, and actually, they kind of say that in the 2-hour training that you go through with the county. You know, if you've got anybody that comes in and they want to vote and they are from another state, another county, another town, whatever, go ahead and let them vote. We don't want any problems. We'll deal with it later.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
So how do they verify that with another state? Like, I understand that happened in New York and Florida. A lot of people living in New York in the winter and moving down south in the summer, they vote in both places. So how do you verify that?
Well, that's the problem. It doesn't get verified.
so you hold it off to the end, but there's no mechanism.
And the most recent Pew study estimates that somewhere close to 3 million people in this country are voting actively in more than one state. So, you know, that's a problem from state to state that, you know, that does need to be addressed as well with a national database, perhaps. But,
if you look at, for instance, Shasta County alone, the number of provisional ballots being extraordinarily high, our tax increases, for instance, Prop 30, it was called a winner and implemented into law before we know that all of these provisional ballots were even counted.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's probably the case all over the state.
Do they even count the provisional once the election's been called?
I know in our county they do. I know there are a lot of accusations that people make that, you know, they don't count your provisional ballot or they don't count all the vote-by-mail ballots. And I know in our county they very much do count every single ballot eventually. I think that that goes county by county, though, and there may be other counties that say, well, we don't have enough of these ballots left to count to make a change in the results, and so, you know, we won't count them. I know that does happen in places in the nation. I can only tell you that it doesn't happen in San Diego County.
Well, you know, it seems kind of interesting to me because I heard nothing on the news. There, this breakdown of actual walk-in votes, the provisional votes, mail-in votes, there's not been any breakdown, no news stories or news event that says, you know what, this is an abnormally high number of provisional ballots. And why is that happening in a county that we're only, what, 80,000 people here in Shasta County, and that's not a big number. Really, not compared to San Diego. So why is that happening? Why is it that people didn't get their mail-in vote and had to go to these provisional and become provisional? To me, it just takes the whole validity of the voting out of the system.
Right. Well, that's the question we have to ask, and that's what we have to research. And as Linda was saying, we had a lot of people who did not ask to change to vote by mail, and they had been changed to vote by mail, so they showed up to vote in person and were told, well, you know, you're a vote by mail person, and they said, no, I'm not. So this whole concept of every voter needs to go away feeling happy with the experience mm-hmm. did not get...
No.
The position here, because a lot of people went away very angry because they weren't on rolls or they had been changed to vote by mail without their knowledge. And so there does need to be some investigation as to how this happened on such a wide scale in this election. Then when you factor in addition to that, the people who just choose to vote provisionally because it's somehow more convenient for them on election day, you end up with quite a mess.
Now, Ruth, this high, unusually high number of provisional ballots, and you indicated that it happened across the state. Is this a problem on an individual county basis, or is this coming down through the Secretary of State?
Let me let Linda respond to that, if I may.
We believe that somehow it came from the state because it has been consistent in really all of the counties in which our reports came in. So when we see a pattern that spans every large county in the state and then all of the small counties, then that's the only conclusion we can come to. You might say, well, of course it happened in the large counties. There's so many people that need to be processed that no wonder there's a large number. But as you stated, Shasta County was 80,000. Why in the world did it happen there?
Exactly.
So something happened. And as All Things EIP, we are really careful to do the research first. And so we don't have a definitive reason for that right now because we're in that process of gathering the evidence, taking that documented evidence, and presenting it to analysts and attorneys. And what I can tell you is we will get to the bottom of it. And whatever actions need to be taken will be taken. And we will be able to let you know as we're going what that action is. But truly, the provisional balance was huge. I can tell you, too, and we would love to hear from people, that if they were one of the citizens who were changed to vote by mail without their knowledge, or if they were moved into a new district and forced to vote by mail, or if they went to the polls and their name was no longer there, we would love to hear from them. We really want to see a very clear pattern as much as possible all over the state, and so they can contact our website and send us their story. We will send them out witness statements or any kind of other additional paperwork where they can tell their story if they want their story to be added to the state report. But we are very, very concerned about the huge number of provisionals.
And you probably can't answer this, but I would wonder if there, and you're we're a nonpartisan organization, but I would wonder if there was a trend toward one party or the other on this abnormally high number of provisional ballots.
Well, you know, the one thing we know for sure is when you research evidence, the evidence tells its own story.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the story that will be told, is the truth of the evidence. Right now, we're going to really work hard at sorting through the high emotion that everyone is feeling when we know that something is wrong. You know, with human beings, we have this innate sense when something is wrong.
Exactly.
In all of the state and the country, really, but mm-hmm. we're a California organization, so we'll kind of focus on that. But all over the state, we're hearing people concerned that something happened.
So there's lots of people in this county that didn't get their mail-in vote. Who? What's the website so that they can contact you?
They can go to www.electionintegrityproject.com, and there will be a Contact Us tab. They can go to that tab and type in their story there. We're going to actually set up a specific place where people can tell their story. There are so many people who are already going to contact us, so we want to make it really simple for people to do that. But even now, they can go to contact us.
And will there be a prompting for them to indicate which party they're registered with, or do you encourage them to give that information so that you can see whether there's a trend toward one party or the other?
We're actually not going to even ask them what party affiliation
are,
because as we research, we'll find out where the party affiliation is.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're going to stick to our nonpartisan effort, and we believe good research does not start with a preconceived premise. It allows the research to tell the story.
Okay.
Will your research be done before the next election? Sorry.
Yeah, that's, she would have been great on CSI.
Yeah.
So how long will it take for your research to get done? Will it be before the next election?
We are working hard and fast. We are running our first queries this week. I have to tell you, I am so proud of the committed volunteers who are doing this work. They have come to headquarters daily and helped to input. They've worked from their own homes inputting. We want this. We'd like to be able to have a picture of what took place by the end of the month. We really know that we must do this as quickly as possible. And if indeed there are outcomes of elections that are not valid, we want to do it well before the elections are officially called at the end of the month. So that's
our game plan. Yeah, could it change the election? Could it change the outcome?
No, we're going to present this to attorneys and ask them that, because if someone ended up in office or if a proposition passed illegitimately, the people of California should have the right to maybe perhaps a redo. I don't know. We're going to explore various options that are within the law that allow the people of California and our voice to be heard. So we know time is of the essence, and we're working as quickly as we can to get it done.
So really, for everybody listening out there or following along online, if you are in the state of California, if you or anyone that you're even remotely related to in any way, shape, or form experienced something odd when you went to vote, please go to the website, theelectionintegrityproject.com, and let's get your story, because that's how your voice is going to be heard.
Exactly.
The other thing we'd like to hear, too, we heard lots of people say they went to the polls to vote, they checked the index, and there were people registered at their addresses that they did not know. And so we'd
love to hear
people who checked the index and found strangers registered at their house.
Yeah, but how do you know that? Because I'm old, so I can't see the paper that they're on, but
well, there,
how do you know that?
There's a voter roll attached to the outside of the building. By law, there has to be.
I didn't even know that.
And it has to be changed hourly as people.
I just go in and give my name. They cross me off. I go vote.
And then what they do is they're supposed to go to the list posted publicly at the entrance of the polling place and cross your name off so that we know that you voted.
So that's one place I'm going to check as somebody
Absolutely.
Who now knows.
Okay.
You know, another thing that people maybe are unaware of, if they saved their little ballot receipt, whether regardless of what kind of ballot that they filled out, they should have a receipt from mm-hmm. that ballot. If they save that, then they can go online to their Registrar of Voters website as soon as the election is certified, and they can type in that number and find out whether their ballot was counted.
They can find out
whether it got scanned, whether it went through, whether it was actually tabulated. And if it was a provisional ballot or a mail-in ballot, if it was rejected, then they have to state the reason why it was rejected. So they can go online and say.
So there's still a lot that we as citizens and voters can do, even though Election Day is over.
So my
right, you know, most people take that ballot stub and they, you know, stick it on the refrigerator for a week or so just to say, okay, I voted, and then they just throw it away. But they don't really realize the value of that stub. And we're encouraging every single voter to go online and find out, to track their ballot. Find out.
Wow.
In fact, you can go online right now and track it and find out whether your ballot has currently been tabulated or whether it's still in process, whether it got received. So that's another thing a vote-by-mail person can do, is you can mail your ballot, and 3 or 4 days later, you can go on that website, and they will update that and let you know at least the ballot got received. And then, you know, later on let you know through the processing whether it got counted, and if not, why they rejected it. So that's a piece of information that people need to know about.
And we need to put that information out before the election to let people know that it's important to keep your receipt.
I think we're going to be educating people about a lot of things before the next election. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break so that we don't get all bunched up at the end. I'm going to thank our advertisers. Refresh the coffee.
How little we know. How much to discover.
I said, well, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. That's my story. Oh, that's my story. Well, I ain't got a witness, and I can't prove it. But that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Oh, Bob. You outdid yourself again. Who's that?
I've said that to my husband. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
That's Colin Ray.
Okay. Cool. So, everybody listening out there, get your story in. TheElectionIntegrityProject.com. Hey, so you were listening to KCNR 1460, Free Fire Media.
So, two things that I now know.
Yes.
Look at the voter rolls and save your receipt, which I do. I save my receipt.
I still have mine.
And we had talked about on break going into these different polling places, and now you write them in. So, I didn't really have any idea how you could check your vote. And so that just makes a whole lot of sense.
And so that's kind of interesting. That brings me to a question. We spent a lot of time prior to this election trying to get people involved in volunteering for the election process. How can we spin this in another direction before the next election to highly educate the public on all of these little nuances that most people don't know?
Social media.
What do you think, ladies?
Well, the one thing that we are going to do in the next phase with the Election Integrity Project is focus on education. We have several avenues that we're doing that, but one that we're going to begin doing immediately is through our website and through the Observer and also through our Facebook page. We've redesigned a little bit of our Observer. That's our e-newsletter. We encourage everyone to get on that. We send it out once a week so as not to inundate your inboxes. But we have a section now called the State of the Elections, and we're going to begin to put this kind of information in the Observer. How to go and check that your ballot was processed, or what is the election code say regarding vote by mail ballots. And some of this is actually very long, so we're going to need to be really careful to put what's, you know, the pertinent information that will help the voter. And then we will tell our story as we're allowed to put different elements of the story out. We'll put that out through the Observer to let Californians know, well, here's what happened, and here's why it happened, and here's what you can do about it. We're going to give action items. So we're finding all over the state that people have gone to their registrars of voters and said, I've got a change of address, or my loved one has passed away, would like you to remove them from the voter rolls. And this is not happening.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to encourage citizens to stay on top of it. We can no longer assume that our registrars of voters are doing the job of updating their voter rolls, because we know they're not. Many of them say they are, and yet people are finding their deceased loved ones still on the voter rolls. So we have to assume that as much as they might want it to be done, it's not being done.
And for,
so stay on it.
And for the average citizen to follow up on that and to stay on top of their registrar or voters, do they go online to double-check that that's been taken care of?
Yeah, let me mention, too, that before every election, voters should go online to their registrar or voters' website and check their registration. There should be a link there, and especially when it's a partisan election, such as a primary, because we had a lot of people in the primary show up to find out that they were currently not registered with the party they thought they were registered with, so they were unable to get the ballot that they had shown up to get. And some of that may have been their own fault, but a lot of it is you know, error and intentional wrongdoing. And so before an election, you can go on and find out the way in which you're registered online and find out what party you're registered with and what address you're registered at, so that you are up to date and you are informed about your own status. And that this is something that people need to be proactive about, you know, on their own. Don't just let the system take care of it. So, you know, we encourage everyone to go to our website and just sign up to receive that newsletter, and that all of these pieces of information will come to them on a regular basis and remind them, so that so we have a more educated electorate.
You know, and I know it's no secret that all of the indications, both nationwide and in the state of California, in terms of how the election was going, how races were going, which direction propositions were headed, the outcome at the end of the day was completely different than what all the indicators were. So I don't think that it's any secret that a lot of the public believes that something did not go right. And Linda, you've told me in the past, because your job is specifically to travel the entire state of California building your volunteer base, and you have told me that this is not a blue state, and in fact, it is very purple.
You know, we have come to believe that the data on the existing voter rolls is not accurate, because there are just thousands and thousands of duplicate registrations. And so numbers are kind of a funny thing. They tell a story, and if the numbers are not accurate, they tell a story that is not accurate. When you talk to people all over the state and you find that both Democrats and Republicans believe in the foundational principles of the Constitution, they are not in favor of seeing this state move toward European socialism. When you educate Californians about what the facts are on the propositions, and not the wording that can be manipulated, that they tend to vote more in favor of staying with the constitutional principles. So when you look at that, and then you look at the numbers of registrations on the rolls, you have to doubt the outcome. And so I do believe that we are more of a purple state than a blue state, and I think that we will see a different picture of our state once we update the voter rolls county by county and then across the whole state.
So for most of the folks out there who, there's a lot of people that don't get online, so they're older folks or they just don't get online, don't see this as a priority for getting online. If there are two or three bullet points that we can, in the media, say, okay, the next election is in June, and we want you to do one of three things. We want you to check those voter rolls. We want you to save your receipt. Just two or three things that we can do to say to these folks so that they can make sure that their vote counts. Because in our county, one person has won an election council seat with 11 votes. And so it does matter. So every vote counts. And for those people that didn't get their mail-in ballots or were provisional, they wonder, is my vote going to count for this person's seating? Is that number wider or smaller? We don't know.
Well, if they don't go online, then they can call. So I would say bullet point number one is make sure that your registration is what you want it to be by calling and verifying or even going directly down to the registrar office and having them show you how am I registered to make sure you're comfortable with that. Bullet point number two is vote in person, and bullet point number three is vote in your own precinct.
And if you have a mail-in vote? Because there are several in our county, because it's really a rural area that that were just changed to mail by vote by mail.
Right, and personally, if I were forced to vote by mail, I would take the trouble and the time to drive my vote to the Registrar of Voters office and turn it in there.
You know, one thing that you talked about how convenient things are, a lot of things are done for the convenience of the Registrar of Voters, and recently in our town, they put up drop boxes, one in front of City Hall and one in front of the county clerk's office, where you could just drop your ballot in. And in talking with our ROV, she indicated that it created a lot less foot traffic inside their office, which was easier and more convenient for them. However, there was only one individual that was going and picking up the ballots out of these boxes every day, and there was no oversight over that one individual.
You also want to look at the impact that that could be financially, because these votes that are turned in early in such a fashion with no one there to check the envelopes prior to their submission to the box, then when they start to process them, if they notice that an envelope is filled out improperly, it lacks essential information, then they have to mail that ballot back to that voter and say, here's what you're lacking, fix it and get it back to us. So that's additional postage, additional labor, additional time that the taxpayer is paying for because people are allowed to drop things off without having somebody check it. In our county, the drop boxes are only at the Registrar of Voters office, and there is someone staffing those drop boxes all day long so that the envelopes are checked before they go into the box. But I know that's not true in other counties. They can just drop them off anywhere.
Do they do that if the amended ballot, if the race has been called already? So if there's an amendment, do they send that out anyway and say fix it before the...
No. They can't do that after Election Day.
Okay, that's what I'm saying.
They can only do that if they've received a ballot that got mailed in early and there is time to process that correction, then that's what they do, which is why it's essential that the law be followed on Election Day, because we have record numbers of people who don't want to subject their vote-by-mail ballot to the mail process, and they do walk it in on Election Day to the polling place and submit it, which is perfectly legal. But
we're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
And we're coming up quickly on the top of the hour, and we've got a caller that'll come in just after the two-minute break to thank our advertisers. Thank you.
Teach me, cheat. Show me how you do it. I want to learn from the very best, the one who cheats on me. Teach me love. Never better now, make me a honky-tonk angel. Teach me.
Yeah, the morning after was less than euphoric a couple of weeks ago. Anyway, you were joining We the People Radio. And in advance, I'd like to thank our guests, Ruth Weiss and Linda Payne of the Election Integrity Project, in case we bump up against the top of the hour and I don't get a chance to. And very quickly, we have a caller on the line. Charles, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thanks for hanging in.
Yeah. In the newspaper, yesterday there was mentioned in a front-page article the possibility that one of the city, a losing city council candidate, might request a recount of the vote. And first is addressed to you specifically. Are there recount observers ready to observe in the event that a recount is called for? And then second part is to the guests in general, what do they have to say about recall observing and related subject matter? And it would have been good if time were allotted earlier in the hour to bring this up.
Or if you had called earlier.
I had called earlier, but you kept going on and on and on and on and on about everything else.
Oh, well, you know how that is when it's a radio show. Talk. Hey, so ladies, what do you think about that? What about observing recounting?
And thank you, Charles.
You know, if that's a good question, and that's something that I think is critical. If there's going to be a recount of the vote, then we, each of our teams in our counties, would be good if we could put out a an all-points bulletin to our volunteers and get observers who are willing to go out and observe the recount. That any race that is critical should be have observers, and we want to be able. And that's our job and our goal is to observe that the process is handled according to the law.
And I think
we don't.
Go ahead.
When we have the EIP hat on, we don't have a stake in who's. Who wins and who doesn't, just that that the law is followed, the process goes according to the law. All of us, when we take our hat off, we all have candidates that we are behind and parties that we represent or that we support. But when that EIP hat is on, we're there just to make sure that the law is followed. So he's got a great point there.
And no matter who wins, your candidate wins or doesn't win, all we want is fair. We just want it to be fair, and we want a sense that it is fair.
And follow the law.
And you don't really feel like there's a fairness to it. And I think those bullet points are really good bullet points. We'll provide websites. We'll provide phone numbers from now on to get people prepared for the next election. I wish I knew that before this election, because it would have made a difference for me.
Well, and I encourage folks to go to wethepeopleradio.us, and there will be links there regarding today's show. Also, join the Election Integrity Project on Facebook. You know, whether or not we're fans of social media, it is what it is, and that is how people communicate and get the word out, and you can use it to your advantage. So jump onto Facebook if you're not already a Facebook fan, and join the Election Integrity Integrity Project.
That's how we get the word out, really. And even folks who don't normally get on the internet, a lot have Skype, Facebook, you name it. So,
or email. Email, if it's as simple as email for you, take advantage of that. If you get the Observer, if you join the Election Integrity Project, you'll get that newsletter, and you can just spread the news. But we'll do a real push to educate people long before they go to vote next time.
Can we get some the training? I know it was very close to the election. The training was done, but can the training for this project be done at now?
Ongoing?
Yeah, a couple times a year, so that you have a pool of more volunteers?
In fact, I'm glad you're asking that, because we are making some changes in our education. We're going to highlight and focus on education between now and the next election, so that there are lots and lots of options for being educated about our elections code, our elections laws, and the rights of poll workers and poll observers. So that's definitely in the game plan. And something I wanted to just throw in real quick before we run out of time is right now people want to take action. People are concerned. They're upset about their own voting experience. And we would like to encourage people to take that action even now. Find out how they're registered. Find out if their ballot was processed. And we would like to encourage them to send, to do two things. Number one, communicate with the registered voters and do everything in their power to get their registration up.
And Linda, and we're wrapping up real quick here, but go to electionintegrityproject.com, share your story so that you can be included. Thanks.